Welcome to Go For It, the Battle After the War. So real quick, I want to share an audio clip. I'm going to jump right into that right now.
Since the attacks of September 11, 2001, more than 3 million Americans have deployed to war zones across the globe, serving our great nation with honor. The global war on terrorism, which represents the longest stretch of war in American history, has taken a tremendous toll in terms of both visible and invisible wounds. It is estimated that 20% of these remarkable warriors are struggling with traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, or other psychological health conditions such as depression, anxiety, insomnia, and addiction, which more often than not also adversely affect the military spouse and children. Sadly, we have now lost more brave souls to suicide at home than on the battlefield. While close to 80% of these veterans and their families will overcome these challenges, for those who suffer, there is a great need for a national network of clinical and non-clinical programs to provide these veterans and their families with every opportunity to have a successful transition after their service is complete. Efforts are underway to develop a national network comprised of existing best-in-class programs. This network will continue to strengthen itself by working in collaboration with the many great community-based nonprofit organizations all over the country to help heal the invisible wounds of war. Working together to close the gap between the private and government sectors, we can give these veterans and their families the best chance at living with post-traumatic growth as opposed to past trauma. We will continue to strengthen and empower these brave men and women and their families so they can continue to serve our nation as the true leaders they are.
And with that, I want to introduce Captain Michael Hartford, U.S. Navy retired, to discuss TBI, or traumatic brain injury, with us today. Mike, thank you for being here with us.
You're welcome, Mark.
So I'm just kind of excited to jump on this topic here on the heels of PTSD Awareness Month in June. However, our schedules have been a little off a bit, so I'm excited to get into this now and actually start discussing it. Can you kind of give the audience a little bit of history about you and what you're doing with traumatic brain injury and I guess a little bit about what TBI is?
Sure. Yeah, that intro with Gary Sinise is near and dear to me. It was actually videoed at the Marcus Institute for Brain Health at the University of Colorado. And that's where I have been working over the last 3+ years to open up the very first veteran-centric traumatic brain injury center in the United States.
That's exciting in its own right. Is that something that's going to spread throughout, or is that just going to stay in the Colorado area?
Yeah, as referenced with Gary Sinise's remarks, we are in the process of developing a national network of both clinical and non-clinical programs to address those invisible wounds of war. The clinical program, which is the one that I've been involved with since day one at the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, is going to be the hub of a hub-and-spoke model that will include 9 other brain health institutes nationwide. Through the generous donations from 2 primary philanthropic individuals, one being Bernie Marcus, co-founder of Home Depot and the Marcus Foundation, and the other being Arthur Blank, who is also a co-founder of Home Depot and the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, have contributed millions of dollars for this project to continue to move forward. As of today, July 9th, 2020, we have signed partnerships with the University of Tulane in New Orleans, Jefferson University in Philadelphia, and the University of Florida, the School of Medicine out of Jacksonville, Florida. We also have a partnership with the military SHEER initiative at the Shepherd Center in Atlanta. So those are our present partners, and we continue to work with other academic institutions to develop brain health institutes in other geographic areas that have a significant veteran population. So we're really excited about how things are moving. We also are in partnership with the nonprofit organization called Boulder Crest. Boulder Crest is a retreat that originated in the Virginia area, in Beaumont, Virginia, and they have expanded to another site outside of Tucson, Arizona, and they are also working on developing up to 10 sites nationwide. And their non-clinical approach is a program called Progressive Alternative Therapies for Healing Heroes, PATH, P-A-T-H-H. And they have been, they developed a program back in 2013 that has had tremendously positive impacts on veterans and their families who are suffering from the invisible wounds of war. But we're really excited about the future as it relates to expanding the ability to not just evaluate, but treat those that have a primary traumatic brain injury condition, which is often misdiagnosed as a mental health disorder.
How is that possible? How is there a connection there for that misdiagnosis to happen? Can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. It's a great question, Mark. What I think is unfortunate is that, as I referenced, an invisible wound is just that. And the symptomatology of someone who might be suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or other allied psychological health conditions often are treated because that's the diagnosis that a physician will give. But when you, in fact, peel the onion back, and if you have a really specialized clinician that knows how to assess a brain injury, oftentimes there's things that that person is having challenges with that are related to a brain injury more so than a psychological condition. So the physiological issues as it relates to balance, as it relates to speech, as it relates to sleep disorders, all of those things, when you really do a really intense assessment, the primary diagnosis in many instances is a person who has had a traumatic brain injury. And when you think about different levels of brain injuries, it goes from obviously mild, moderate to severe. And I think the mild and moderate traumatic brain injuries, especially for those that have served in the military and were exposed to IED explosions, they probably got their bell rung. And as is the case with most individuals that serve in the military, I'm going to stay in the fight, and they'll stay and do anything to stay in the fight. And so they never report it, or they under report their symptoms to the medic or the corpsman that might be out in the field. And if you get two concussions in a very short period of time, the risk factors of having persistent TBI issues is much greater than just having an episodic traumatic brain injury or severe concussion, and you don't have one for a long period of time after that. So every person, this is what's unique about the brain, is every person's brain acts and reacts differently to what your brain may be exposed to. And so that is what makes it a challenge.
Gotcha, that makes sense. So I was reading through RISC. I don't know if you're familiar with RISC, the War-Related Illness website, and they specify three particular factors, I guess, I think at the time of head injury. One was Glasgow coma scores, length of loss of consciousness, and then the other is length of post-traumatic amnesia. Are you able to speak on those three points at all?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have done at the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, and which will be done at all of our Harpic facilities, is as you assess the symptomatology, you know, those are the questions amongst many others that are asked, because it really does make a difference on how you sustain head injury.
Gotcha.
And how long you had been in an unconscious state. And what happens, and this is what's unique about the combat veteran who frequently has been diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury. An IED explosion is a 25,000 mile an hour explosion. So if you're in close proximity when there is an IED explosion, that 25,000 mile an hour literally wrecks your brain from side to side. So it bounces off the skull. And if you're close enough, it also will take you off your feet. So imagine that brain going back and forth, and then you getting knocked off your feet and landing on your head. So you literally have two significant brain traumas within seconds of each other. And so what we don't know is what are the long-term residuals or repercussions as it relates to having a blast injury as opposed to, say, a football player that gets hit in the head with another player and sustains a concussion. So there's a tremendous amount of research going on in brain injuries. I think two things that have really elevated the visibility, one obviously are the significant number of post 9/11 veterans that have a traumatic brain injury, and the other is the high visibility of head injuries in professional sports, more so probably in football and in hockey. So I think that we continue to work not just in the United States, but internationally with studies and research on what brain injury does that individual have, and B, what is the best course of treatment for that brain injury. But it's that if you think about every organ in the body, we pretty much know if you have a heart condition, we know if your pancreas isn't producing the insulin, we know if your kidneys and livers aren't functioning properly, but we don't have a huge amount of knowledge on how the brain works to the degree that we can diagnose and treat effectively every brain condition that people have all over the world.
Yeah, I've heard that before. I've actually had doctors tell me that as far as knowledge goes in comparison to like a human model, we're pretty much at the infancy stage of learning what the brain is, how it functions, and the amount of power it has to do things throughout the body.
That is pretty, it's fascinating. I think as we become more sophisticated with technology, I think we're going to continue to learn more about the brain. You know, obviously you have your MRIs and you have your CAT scan, but you know, there's definitely some additional technology, a PET MRI scan. There's a few places in the country that have that capability, and what it really allows you to do is really take a look at the brain, basically in a three-dimension diagram, which is fascinating because there's spots in parts of the brain. You know, somebody that has, say, diagnosed with MS, for instance, you can actually look at the brain and see dark spots in particular areas of the brain that give you the diagnosis of MS, and sometimes those dark spots continue to grow and your condition deteriorates. Other times, you know, it won't grow and you maintain that diagnosis, but you are pretty much asymptomatic, and we don't know why. That's just one example. I can tell you I was at the bedside of the most catastrophically wounded injured and ill for 3 years during the peak of the global war on terrorism. And I can tell you with 100% certainty that they were kids, and I say they were kids because they were in their 20s, and and they had part of their brain blown up. And some of them literally were able to remap certain parts of the brain that have, you know, that may be your part of your brain that that allows you to speak, part of your brain that allows you to see or taste. And the brain has, in some instances, the ability to basically remap. I saw a kid that was in a coma for almost 3 years, and now he's driving around in an electric wheelchair, and he literally has his left hemisphere is almost completely gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a miracle. But my point is that, you know, when we talk about brain injuries from mild, moderate to severe, the ability for one to recover is so different in every single case.
Right. Well, you kind of hit on my next question. I was going to ask you if there was any one particular case that you could, if you recalled any, that might have stuck out to you as far as a TBI success, you know, somebody who's maybe had a mild or moderate experience that has turned their life around and started becoming a viable person in society.
We treated a gentleman who was recently retired from the Army. He was an E-8. And since he retired, he has a wife and two young kids. He would not leave the house. He spent almost all of his time in the dark basement of their home. Did not have a relationship with his spouse or his two young children. And he was in that state for about 18 months. And finally, his wife reached out to us at the Marcus Institute for Brain Health and said, you know, my husband is not the same person he once was after his last deployment. And she proceeded to share with us the story of him being injured in an IED explosion. So we reached out to this this gentleman and convinced him to come to the Marcus Institute. He was reluctant at first. He was not as cooperative as one would think at the outset, but we worked with him. We customized his treatment plan, and in the 3 weeks that he participated in our intensive outpatient program, we have a commencement ceremony after our cohorts complete their 3-week program, and oftentimes the veteran and the family will have an opportunity to say a few words. And in this case here, he said, you know what, I have my life back. I don't want to sit in the basement any longer. I want to be a husband. I want to be a father. I want to be able to be a positive adult role model for my family, and I want to be able to contribute to society. And that was 2+ years ago. He's one of our most active marketing tools, for the lack of a better term, on how if you get the right care for your brain injury, you can really have your life transformed.
That's amazing. So in talking about the program and what's available to them, how would a veteran apply, or is this something that the management from this program will just reach out to the VA and like a random number and pick somebody, or how does that work? How does a veteran get in contact with this program?
What I can do, Mark, is I can send you the link to the Marcus Institute for Brain Health website, and anybody can call and request an assessment. It doesn't have to be a referral from a clinician. It doesn't have to be from VA, even a veteran who was discharged other than honorably, who has a brain injury, we will treat if they meet the clinical criteria.
That in itself is amazing. That's awesome. I'm glad to hear you say that.
And you know, since 9/11, I can tell you firsthand that a lot of our service members have come back from a war zone, and they're broken. So the leadership, and this is something that I have a strong feeling about, I think oftentimes the leadership is not knowledgeable about this person being broken. So they may not be showing up at work on time, or their performance may not be what it once was. And they do stupid stuff like self-medicate, maybe take illegal drugs, DUIs, domestic violence issues, and those individuals ultimately end up getting separated under less than honorable conditions, and they don't have the same benefits as an honorably discharged veteran. And I don't know the numbers, but I think we're talking at least 2,000 since post 9/11. I can't verify that, but I can say unequivocally that it's definitely in the six figures that there's that many veterans out there, and a lot of them have brain injuries, and they are floundering because they are not entitled to VA care. They're probably not able to be maintain gainful employment because of their invisible wound. So we are more than receptive and open to treating any veteran, regardless of era, if we are convinced that their primary diagnosis is a traumatic brain injury. And I can say, in our website, there's a number to call, and we do a phone assessment, and if the assessment indicates that this individual has clearly got a brain injury, and then we invite that individual at no cost to the veteran. We invite that individual to Colorado and do a 3 or 4 day evaluation. And then based upon that, we determine that, yes, this person now is clearly suffering from a traumatic brain injury as their primary diagnosis, and we invite them back for a 3-week intensive outpatient program. So that's the process. We take a lot of self-referrals, because we've got a lot of folks that have come through our program that were in like special ops, Navy SEAL, and when somebody goes to the program and says, my brothers that and sisters that I fought with are having the same issues that I am, so they contact their brothers and sisters, and that's probably our biggest referral source for those that come through the program and benefit from their treatment that they receive, and they reach out to their battle buddies.
That's awesome. So for the Marcus Institute, I mean, I know this just started, right? Just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, we saw our first patient in July of 2017.
Wow.
And since that time, it's like 3 years now. Since that time, I believe we probably have seen well over 300 veterans and family members, and have changed most of their lives.
That's awesome. How many veterans do they see a day? Do you know?
Well, we do cohorts, and cohorts of, we have 2 treatment teams, and each treatment team can see up to 10 patients per cohort. So our goal is to have 20 patients at any given time in various different stages of either an evaluation or treatment plan. So we continue to grow our infrastructure, grow our staffing to be able to accommodate potentially up to 20 patients at any given time. Right now, we've probably been averaging, with the caveat that COVID-19 has certainly put a monkey wrench in everything in the healthcare arena.
Yeah.
And so things certainly are at a somewhat of a standstill right now.
Right.
Because we don't know what the new norm is going to be. But prior to COVID-19, we were, like I said, seeing to 10 to 14 patients for a 3-week period over with the staff and the infrastructure that exists in Colorado. Now, as I mentioned before, as we roll out this national consortium, we expect to be able to treat literally thousands of patients a year at all of our different locations. And we're also a community partner with the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, and in fact, just recently, the VA authorized a person to work with us as a conduit to make sure that a veteran that is referred to us and then subsequent to their treatment plan being fulfilled through the intensive outpatient program, that there's a continuum of care before, during, and after their short-term treatment plan at the Marcus Institute. So that really tells me that the VA is very embracing of our program. In fact, Secretary Wilkie visited the Marcus Institute and vowed to support our program. He feels so strongly about that. So yeah, so VA, I have discussions literally every day with VA leadership on what we're doing, how we're doing it. Myself and a couple of other of my colleagues frequently have gone to the Hill and spoken to our legislators, specifically those that are on the House Veterans Committee and those that are on the Veterans Senate Committee, because there's a lot of needs that are being met by us, and we want to make sure that we stay on the cutting edge, the top of the spear, as it relates to how brain injuries are treated and how the results that we have seen have been pretty much positive in almost every instance.
That's great to have that fluid line of communication from top to bottom.
Indeed.
So if somebody wanted to get more information, you said there's a website. You want to go ahead and say that now? And
yeah, actually, I can send that to you, but if anybody Googled Marcus Institute for Brain Health,
okay,
it will be the first item when you do that.
Okay.
It's the Marcus Institute for Brain Health, and it's located at the Andrews Medical Campus.
Excellent.
University of Colorado, and we're actually part of the University of Colorado School of Medicine.
Is this a private venture, or is the VA funding?
That's a great question. It is actually, even though it's at a state academic institution, it is funded by philanthropic donations. It's not part of the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's a separate autonomous institute that is affiliated with the University of Colorado School of Medicine.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a question I get often. Anytime I do a podcast of this stature, people ask me afterwards if they're VA funded or if they're VA run, or you know what the involvement of the VA actually is. It seems to be kind of important, particularly to the Gulf War vets. So I asked that question, and you know, for something of this magnitude, something that's so important, and you know, TBI goes a long way back. It's not just post 9/11. It's our Vietnam veterans. It's you know, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that they have this access, and to have something like this so easily available for somebody to just pick up the phone and call, you know, I think that's important. The other thing is if there's the ability to donate to something like this, is that possible through the website also, or is there a process for that?
Absolutely. In fact, on the website, there is a place that if you would want to donate, that you can click the donate button, and it'll bring up the page for you to put in your information if you are interested in donating. Absolutely. I think a couple of things I did want to mention that in terms of the veteran population, it doesn't matter when that brain injury occurred, because oftentimes you'll have a veteran that does not have any brain health issues at all while they're in the military. They get in a car accident 2-3 years after the military. We don't care when that brain injury occurred. It's important that we make sure that that diagnosis is in fact a brain injury, and it doesn't make a difference how that happened. That's one thing I wanted to make clear. And then I just also wanted to mention that our secondary population that we serve are former elite athletes. We've had football, NFL, and NHL players that come through the program, and they have benefited as well.
Interesting.
What's really interesting, Mark, is the unbelievable camaraderie that's developed between those former elite athletes and the veterans that both have traumatic brain injuries. And if you think about it, this is what I realized, seeing that chemistry, that esprit de corps. You know, you have people that are physically fit, by and large. They were part of a team with a mission, and they worked their butts off to fulfill that mission. So there's a lot of commonalities between men and women who sign on the dotted line to give their life to the country if need be, and those professional athletes who leave it all on the field, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Yeah, when you bring that up, it kind of brings everything together. not something I ever considered.
Right. No, I didn't either until I saw that commonality in that chemistry firsthand.
Right. I have one last question for you. And the only reason it comes to mind is I was just recently talking about this with a colleague of ours. In your own words, what does freedom mean to you?
That's a great question, especially as we look at how things are
under,
in our world today.
Mm-hmm, the undercurrent climate.
I think that, you know, freedom to me is the ability for one to choose what they want to do and have the ability to pursue, whether it be an education or trade or anything that they have a passion to be able to go out and do that. I think freedom also means to me that a small number, and it is a small number, it's about 1% of over 325 million who live over the clock of our great nation, to have a segment of the population that is willing to allow the 99% to have freedom, knowing that it's taken for granted more often than not. So it's the ability to do what you want to do. It's the ability to speak your mind without worrying about whether you're going to get thrown in jail or, in some instances, in other countries, if you speak up against the leadership, the dictators, I mean, they literally will kill you. You know, we can speak our minds in this country, and that's part of what I think makes this the best and the most prolific country in the world. And I think anybody that's here, whether you were born here or whether you immigrated here legally, it is the best country in the world.
I couldn't agree more. I'm going to go ahead and close this out for today. I'm glad we finally got the opportunity to speak. Like I said, TBI is so important, and it's, I think, becoming more prevalent, especially the longer these wars seem to last.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's been a condition that has not received, I think, the recognition and visibility that It ought to, but I think we're heading in the right direction.
I agree. All right, well, thank you very much for joining me. I'm going to go ahead and close this cast out today. And I hope everybody has a great rest of their week. And don't forget to elbow a vet. Elbow bump a vet.
Thanks again, Mark. You have a great day.